John chapter 11, 17 through 21. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said, "Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died."
Appreciate James for leading that song and Kevin for the reading. The passage in John 11 is not one that I'm going to really focus on during the lesson, but I chose it because I think that's the sentiment or that's the feeling of people a lot of times. If the Lord was with me or if God had been with me during such and such, then maybe this bad thing would not have happened. And that seems to be really what she's saying. If you'd been here, Lazarus would not have died. I want you to think about that as we get into the lesson. One quick announcement that I want to make sure I make, because I neglected to put it in the bulletin, along with neglecting to put an announcement about the class. I don't know where my head was, but anyway, Friday night class is this Friday night. And also next Sunday night, we want to have a singing after the evening services. So that'll be Sunday night after the evening services. We'll gather over at the house and kind of crowd around in the living room and overflow if necessary. On the bottom floor there, but do some singing. We'll have some refreshments of some kind. Not sure what we're going to do yet, but anyway, like for you to come, and so anybody is welcome. Please keep that in mind, and come over and let's do some singing and just enjoy being together. This morning, in keeping with our theme, spending a year with Jesus, I wanted to take a look at this song. Now, it's somewhat of an old song. It's written in the mid-1800s. It has some outdated language, or at least language we don't commonly use anymore. So maybe as you were singing through this, you saw some phrases, even some words, a word or two maybe, that you weren't sure exactly what the song was saying. I want to talk about that. But more importantly, I want to talk about the idea of the Lord being with us. If we're going to spend a year with Jesus, one of the things we certainly want to emphasize is the idea of being with Jesus, remaining with Jesus, and His remaining with us. Like He said Himself in John 15 and verse 4, "Abide in Me," in other words, stay in Me, remain in Me, and I'll do the same in you. We reminded ourselves this morning in class downstairs in Philippians chapter 4 that the Lord is at hand, that is, that He is near, and we need Him to be near, and we want Him to always be close. So let's take a look at this song. Abide with Me. The first verse says, we sang, I hope, "Abide with Me, fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens, Lord, with Me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, oh, abide with Me." Maybe one of the terms you're not that familiar with is this word eventide. It just simply is an old English term, and the earliest reference I could find was in the 600s, so it's an old one. But an old English term for evening, or the time when evening is falling. You know, this time of year it gets dark early, as we say. Evening falls. We're past the winter solstice from December the 21st. About a month removed from that, and I noticed that yesterday. I was coming over the building to copy the bulletin, and all of a sudden, 4:30 had slipped up on me, and I thought, boy, it's going to be dark, and I looked outside. Well, it was still light, and so it took notice of the fact that we're a month past that. But this is the idea, and symbolically, of course, darkness is darkness. We all understand that, but symbolically, it stands, when the darkness deepens, it stands for the idea of something that is dismal, or gloomy, or it relates to some grim or depressing circumstance that comes in your life. When we say things are dark right now, and people still use that terminology, they still speak of that. I'm going through a dark time right now, or even sometimes somebody will say a black time for the darkest or the gloomiest, most depressing of circumstances. But this song emphasizes when the darkness deepens, and when other helpers that might be out there, when they fail, there are certain things in life that just cannot be accomplished. with the help of other people, our other things in life, our comforts that we find. We got through with our work last night, Montel and I. We kind of planned, you know, Juliet's at winter camp for the weekend, so we're going to have a little date in the living room. And we were both trying to get through with all we had to do, you know. And I was looking forward to that. You know, the idea of just going downstairs and kicking back, watching an old movie, like, you know, it's what we like to do. And just, that's a very comforting thing, to be with your wife and watch an old movie or whatever, you know. But when comforts flee, and there are circumstances in life that take those comforts away, even if you would try to comfort yourself, you just can't, because something is going on. Maybe you've lost a loved one, and there are people here who have lost a very close person to them recently. Or you've got some sickness, or some loved one is sick. There's just no way to be helped in a circumstance like that. There's no way to be comforted by things of the earth. And that's why you become helpless. Help of the helpless. Oh, abide with me. You know, the Lord makes the point. You may want to turn over to Hebrews 13 or just simply read it up above me here. But Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6, quote a passage from Joshua 1 and also from something David said in the Psalms, a little bit different rewording of it. But the Lord said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. The Lord is at hand. The Lord is near. Abide in me and I in you. Lord, if you'd been here, I am here, Jesus would say. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And the word forsake there is the idea of being completely separated. Sometimes it even carries the idea of turning your back on someone to forsake them or abandoning them. God will never do that. Jesus will never do that with us. We may flee Him. We may turn our back on Him, as it were. But He will never do that for us, no matter what. No matter the problem, the circumstance, the sin, or whatever it might be, as long as we are alive and as long as we are willing to turn to Him and come to Him, He'll be with us. And so Jesus said, so you may boldly or confidently say, most of your translations will say, you with confidence can say, the Lord. Remember, Jeff emphasized this word Lord. Jehovah, Yahweh, is my helper. I will not fear. And then he asked the question, what can man do to me? I'm reminded of something Jesus said in Luke chapter 12 when he made the point, you know, people can take your life, but don't be afraid of that. As a Christian, even, and I'm sure most of us can say it academically, but we really don't think about it. We don't imagine someone actually coming and taking our life. We're shocked when that happens to someone we know or even to a stranger. And yet, what Jesus says is, even if that happens, I know you, I'm aware of you, I'm with you, I'll take care of you. It's exactly what he's telling us. No need to fear that morbid anxiety we have about death or tend to have as human beings. James led a song earlier, and the idea was we don't know if we're going to walk the veil. There's another song with, you know, kind of outdated language, but walk the valley of the shadow of death, die. We don't know if we're going to die. Or if we're going to simply hear the trumpet and meet Him in the air. But as a Christian, either way, you have the confidence to say, the Lord is my helper. I'm not going to be afraid. What can man do to me? Even to the point of taking my life, man cannot affect where my soul goes and that I will be with Jesus. Notice verse 2 as we go on in the song. Swift to its close ebbs out life's little day. Earth joys grow dim, its glories pass away. Change and decay in all around I see. O thou who changes not, abide with me. In this particular verse, a couple of ideas are pictures that you see. First of all, the idea of ebbing. And we probably, again, in common language, don't really think of the ebb tide, etc. But the idea of something ebbing is to recede. And when you're talking about the tide, you know, the tide comes in. If you've ever been on the beach, and I'm sure most of us have, if you've spent time near the beach, you know that the water comes in. You can, at night, when we went down to Ocean City last summer, and, you know, we'd sit out and listen to it. And boy, the waves crash in, and the water comes in, and then it recedes back out. It ebbs back toward the sea. And the idea in this song, the picture in this song is life's little day. And the older you get, you realize that. It's almost like it's running out from the moment it starts, you know. The day is over before it really begins. Swift to its close. Very rapid that the day closes out. And earth's joys begin to grow dim and its glories pass away. And I want to emphasize that. Earth's joys grow dim. Not just in a day's time, but over the course of time. You ever find yourself, those of you that are a little bit older, and even if you're just a teenager or something like that, you ever noticed how things that once were such a great joy, you just can't get as excited about it anymore? You watch a little child. I'm amazed at watching little children. I love kids, you know that. But just to watch little children, how excited they get, man, over the smallest little things. You take a kid and get them a little ice cream cone, and they're like, wow, you know. And you're thinking, boy, you know. But that's the way life is. And the longer and the further you go in life, the more those joys grow dim. And the older you get, the more you will find that will be the case. You can't get as excited about things in this life. Things that maybe right now fascinate you. And things that you get so excited about. You'll have to work harder at it later in life. And the older you get, you'll have to work harder and harder to get excited about earth's joys and the glories of this life. Because change and decay in all around I see. You know, the truth is, what's certain in this life is how brief it is. Life is brief. The brevity of life is certain. And so is what we might call entropy, or those of you that are scientists, the second law of thermodynamics, which basically says, and I'll put this in simple terms, everything is changing, the whole universe, and in a sense, everything is decaying. Matter and energy, every substance. It's kind of like an illustration I used to use a long time ago is everything in life is kind of like taking a tractor and sitting it out in the middle of a field. And if you sit that tractor out there and do nothing to it, it's just going to rust right down to the ground. Now, that's a law. It's a law of nature. But let's go further than that. Because what we see is change is certain. I've got a good friend that says, the only real thing you can trust in life is that things are going to change. And I've thought a lot about that, and that's really true. I mean, I hate change, personally. I don't know about you. Maybe you like it, but I don't. I don't like change, and the more change comes in life, you know, I find myself always having to get used to it or learn something new, gadget or whatever it might be, those kinds of things. And I'm not a big fan of that. I like things to stay the same and constant and, you know, familiar and all of that. Now, I know everybody's not the same. But the truth is, regardless of if you like it or you don't, change comes. And this is where we need Edward, see? you're going to fix it? All right. But let's go on with the point. So change comes. And as change comes and decay with it, then as life changes, you have to change with it or you have to hold on to what is constant. Let me back up here. Okay, got it. All right, change is constant. So let's talk about it. O thou who changes not. Turn in your Bible to Malachi chapter 3 for a moment while Kenny is helping me out with this. See, I'm glad I'm not having to do this. But Malachi chapter 3, look down at verse 6 and something God says to these people. When they were constantly changing, they were constantly faithful, unfaithful, doing right, not doing right, etc. God made the point, verse 6, I am the Lord, I change not. There's a passage in Hebrews, and I won't turn to it. You might want to look at it in Hebrews 6. But it's the idea of trusting, of being able to trust, thanks, Kenny. The idea of being able to trust the immutability of God, that God does not change. You can count on it. He doesn't lie. He doesn't change. He doesn't go back on what he says. So as the songwriter is saying, earth's joys grow dim. There's change and decay in everything I see around me, but you, God, do not change. And I can hold on to that. I can trust that. I think back to my life, and maybe you do as well. And I look at all the circumstances in my life that I did not want to change, but that changed anyway. And I'm not going to tell you a long, sad, shaggy dog story, but it is sad. And there are circumstances that changed that I would have begged and pleaded and done anything I could to keep them from changing, but they changed anyway. And they hurt. And they took things away from me. And I know that all of us, we have those things in our lives. Parents died. Maybe children died. People moved away. Friends stopped being friends. People that you could count on ceased to be those you could count on, etc., etc., etc. But God never changes. The one thing that is constant in my life that I can look back from the beginning, I turned away from God at times. But when I came back to God, He was still there. God changes not. Oh, abide with me, thou who changes not. Verse 3, I need thy presence every passing hour. And this becomes the favorite part of my song, or of my favorite part of the song. What but thy grace can foil the tempter's power? We'll come back and mention that. Who like thyself, my guide, Dolores, we were talking about this a moment ago, Yvonne. Who like thyself, my guide and stay can be? Through cloud and sunshine, oh, abide with me. Now, most of the language in this verse is easy to understand. Obviously, the word foil is an interesting one.
Still a problem?
Oh, still out. Okay. Yeah.
You mean I'm doing all that during the show?
Oh. Well, now I'm going to back up because you guys got to see my graphic.
No, it was on. It just went off. So we saw it. Okay.
You want to back up? All right, pull out your songbook then. Look at the songbook then. Number 7, and we'll do it by looking at the songbook. For those of you that might, in posterity, listen to this sermon, having a problem with the PowerPoint going off, and got my technician here trying to bring it back on, and it just doesn't want to come. But anyway, look at your songbook. If you'll notice verse 3, what he's saying is, I need your presence every passing hour of every day. And then he goes on to say, what but your grace, the very favor you give to me, what but your grace can foil? Now this word foil, the idea of it is to defeat. And specifically is to keep something or someone from accomplishing what they would. In other words, from attaining an end. Now when we look at the tempter, we know the tempter is Satan. So think about what the line of the song is saying. What but thy grace can foil the tempter's power? Satan does have power. And he has a lot of things at his disposal. He can tempt you to sin. He can cause bad things to happen in this world. He can seize and take over governments that yield themselves to him. I think Jeff went over Revelation 12 and 13 a little bit. And we see that there. He can do all of these kinds of things. And specifically in your life, there are circumstances, temptations to sin, bad things, etc., persecutions, and the like that can come in your life. And all of those are meant to bring you away from God. You think of the classic story of Job, you see that. Ah, great. The classic story of Job is, God, if you let me do all of this to Job, I'll take him away. Well, notice what the song is saying. Your favor foils the tempter's power. It's being in the favor of God. It's having God be with you. Abide with me. As long as God stays with me, as long as God continues to bless me as He does, and I continue, like we were talking about downstairs this morning, I continue to acknowledge those blessings. I continue to realize the power of God. Realize what God is doing. Notice that's what the song is teaching us. Let's go forward to the line that says, who like thyself my guide and stay can be. And there we go, catch up there. But you remember Paul, for example, 2 Corinthians 12. You want to turn and read that. Remember, Paul had a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what it was. I assume it's bad eyesight, but take that with a grain of salt. But regardless, Paul had a thorn in the flesh, and he went to God and he said, take this thing away from me. So he begged. He said, I petitioned God to take or to remove this thorn in the flesh. And God said no. And that's just like you in your life when you go to God about something in your life that you want to stop, to quit hurting you, to be taken away, and you want God to take it away, and God does not take it away. And we don't understand that. And we don't understand it because we're not God. And God's answer is, my grace is sufficient. That's exactly what Jesus said to him. My grace is sufficient for you. And he goes on to tell him, my strength is made perfect or made complete in weakness. Now, I don't understand that. I do know the process, though. I know that when I struggle in life and I go through things in life, if I just simply try to handle them on my own, I don't get very far. But if I try to handle them with God, I pray to God, I meditate on the Scriptures, I go searching in the Bible for answers, etc., etc. If I do all of that, I grow stronger every time. And I believe that's the exact design of those kinds of things. In fact, if you'll go over to Psalm 31, and guys, we were talking about a song Elvis did that is taken literally from these lyrics. But look at Psalm 31. Psalm 31 has been, it was something that I discovered at a very young age. I was about like Ethan over there, reading the Bible, and I came across Psalm 31. Didn't understand it by any means, but at the same time, there were phrases in it, there were things in it that I could relate to. For example, verse 9, have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I'm in trouble. Even when you're a young kid, you understand being in trouble. I'm in trouble. And my eye is consumed with grief. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means I cry a lot. I hurt, and I cry, and I'm in pain. I understood that as a young kid. Circumstances in life caused me to understand that. But you notice, as he says here, he starts off by acknowledging, look down at verse 3. You are my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for thy name's sake, lead me and guide me. I've always thought that was interesting, at least when I got old enough to really see what it was saying. For thy name's sake, not for my benefit, lead me and guide me. And I think that's the way we approach things all too often. God, I want this thing taken out of my life. Why? For my benefit. I don't want to hurt. I don't want to feel what I'm feeling. I don't want to go through what I'm going through. And God says, no. You've got to go through this. You've got to struggle through this. You've got to grow by this thing. But I don't want to. You see, for thy name's sake, lead me as you would lead me. Guide me as you would guide me. Not as I would. If, even right now in my life, 53 years old, I'd still be like the little kid in the candy store. I'm hungry. I want to gorge on the candy. It's not good for me, but it's what I want. It feels good at the time. It tastes good at the time. And he give me the choice between, you know, something with chocolate and nuts in it as opposed to spinach and liver. You know, I'm going with the nuts and chocolate. That's the way we are. And if God came to us and said, Michael, I give you a choice of a carefree life, never have a problem, never have to deal with anything, coast on out to the day you die, I'd probably choose it. I'd probably be looking and saying, boy, you know, life's been hard enough right up to this point. I deserve a break, you know. That's the way I'd be. But God is, if I step back and said, God, give me what I need, I'm almost afraid to pray that. Because what he might give me is exactly what I need. And it might be really tough. Take this thorn in the flesh away. I'm not going to do that, Paul. It's not what you need. And so Paul goes on then to glory in his persecutions and weaknesses and infirmities because he was made stronger. Lead me and guide me for thy name's sake. It's like Jesus saying in John 14, we'll emphasize this a lot this year, this passage. I am the way. Remember Jeff saying the road? And that's the word that's used there. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Boy, that packs a lot. I'm not going to preach that because that's a sermon to itself. But I am the road, and I am the truth, and I am the life. And no one comes to the Father except he comes through me or by me. It's like Jesus, and you can go home and look this up. Look at how many times Jesus said to people, follow me. Those simple words, follow me. To Matthew the tax collector, get up from your table and follow me. To Peter, Andrew, James, and John, drop your nets and follow me. Follow me, follow me. And that's exactly what we need to do. You are my guide. You are my stay. You are the one that will lead me and guide me for your name's sake. And only by your grace can I foil the tempter's power to take me away from you. It is only by that. Look at verse 4. I fear no foe with thee at hand to bless. Ills have no weight and tears no bitterness. Where is death's sting, and where grave thy victory? I triumph still if thou abide with me. Now, this is probably the verse packed most with terms and phrases that are outdated. It's like a poem that you hate to read in school. But I fear no foe. I fear no enemy or adversary with the Lord, with Jesus, right at hand, near by me to bless me. And then as he said, ills. And ills are just evils or distresses or any misfortune that comes in life. Ills have no weight. Why do they not have a weight? Because it's a question of focus. When some misfortune comes in life, what do you focus on? If you turn over to Hebrews chapter 12 and you look at the first couple of verses there, it talks about the weight that does so easily beset you, sin. And the weight that drags you down. You know, the idea, when a misfortune comes in life, you can focus on it. You can look at that thing, and you can meditate on that thing to death. This is going on in my life, or this didn't happen in my life. It's no secret in here, because I don't make it a secret, that I didn't have a perfect childhood. You know, I didn't have one of those, and many of you didn't either. I share that with you. Childhood was rough. You have to fend for yourself. You have to grow up the best you can. You don't have a lot of things that you need. Now, I know people, and I know people in my own family that have gone through some of that and never get past it. And if you look at me and say, well, Michael, did you really get past it? No, I still deal with it. But at least I deal with it. And that's the point. I don't try to use it as an excuse. I don't say, when I sin, well, I sin because this happened in my childhood. It's not an excuse. I sin because as an adult, I make a choice to sin. The point I'm saying is this. If you focus on that trial, that weight, if you spend your life really focusing, meditating, you know, always thinking about it, always looking at it, and always using it to excuse everything you do, well, that's how you'll spend your life. If you focus on Jesus, and Jesus the answer, Jesus can reconstruct your life, and I believe that. That Jesus can change you from what you were, the old man, to what you can be, the new man. That Jesus can answer the questions of life. That Jesus can remove the burdens of life. If you believe that, focus on that, meditate on that, you will grow. Now you may spend some time growing. And you may find yourself slipping back and having to go back and redo that again and again and again. But the truth is, you will grow. Turn with me, if you will, to Hebrews 2. And I want to read this passage together with you. Because it's the idea here of what God, how God looks at us. How we look at ourselves, maybe, to start with. But how God then looks at us. Now notice, he starts by quoting Psalm 8. And if you'll drop down with me, where did I start? Verse 6. It says, one in a certain place testified. This is Psalm 8. What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the son of man that you visit him? And the word visit there is the idea of take care of. Who am I as a human being that God would be mindful of me? I know people think in terms of God doesn't want to be bothered with me. Or God doesn't have time for me. Where did we ever get that but from Satan? Where did the Bible ever say that? No, in fact, just the opposite. God visits us. God takes care of us. God attends to us. And then he goes on to say, you've made him a little lower than the angels, but you crowned him with glory and honor. And you set over him the works of your hands. You put all things in subjection under his feet. You go back to Genesis 1 and see that. For in that, you put all things in subjection under him. And then he kind of switches. There's a transition to where he applies this specifically to Jesus. Now notice as he goes on to talk about Jesus, verse 9. But we see Jesus. And I won't look at all the verses, but if you go home and read this, you'll see it's the idea of Jesus taking the human body. Jesus being human. We see Jesus, again, like us, made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, but crowned with glory and honor that he, by the grace of God, should taste death, notice, for every man. What is Jesus doing but giving us an example? What is Jesus doing but showing us the way? What is Jesus doing but leading us and guiding us, teaching us that God was with him and God will be with us? We see Jesus. Now notice verse 10. For it became him. That is, it was right. It behooved him. It was becoming of him. For whom are all things, and by whom are all things. And we're going to stress that in a couple of weeks, the idea of Jesus the Creator. But in whom, by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory. What is a son? A son is a human being that has been adopted by God and made an heir. And when you come to God and God adopts you and places you as a son and makes you an heir, now let me say it like this, you are not everything God wants you to be. No more so than if you go down and you adopt a child. And, you know, especially if you get a child that is not a newborn baby and there's a lot of circumstances in life that you have to overcome. But he brings you. Look at that term there. In bringing many sons unto glory. It's this process in this song. Abide with me, God. Abide with me while all the great things, the good things, the fun things in life lose their luster. Abide with me while everything around me decays. Abide with me when everything seems to go wrong. Abide with me, but more than that, don't just stay with me. And that's what I can do or you can do. I can stay with somebody and hold their hand and go through it with them in that sense, but that's all I can do. But God can do so much more. He can take our hand and teach us. And he can bring us through it, but not just through it. Notice that. The verse doesn't just say, in bringing many sons through all the stuff in life they go through. No, bringing us to glory. It was right then for Jesus to be human. The captain of our salvation to be made perfect through sufferings. And, of course, it goes on with that. It's like Romans 8. I won't take time to read it, but you know the passage. For thy sake are we killed all the day long. We're made like sheep for the slaughter. But through him, in him, we are more than conquerors. I triumph still if thou abide with me. Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. In life, in death, O Lord, abide with me. Interesting, this song says, hold thou not my cross, but Jesus' cross before my closing eyes. You know, vain, the idea of something being vain is the idea of it being of no real value, empty. Notice what it says, heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. That is the thing that I think are so real, I get so caught up in, that's the importance of my everyday. When you're young, you know exactly what I'm talking about, those kinds of things. Older you get, the more they become just shadows, and they become vain. And as the song says, in life and death, Paul made an interesting statement in 1 Corinthians 2. I came to you not in excellency of speech, you know, all this great philosophy and all this kind of thing. I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Why would he say that? I think it goes back to this idea in Hebrews 2. I think it goes back to the idea of what you learn from Jesus coming to earth. Ed was talking about it, of how he was so aware and he knew
Because he came with purpose, you see. The very purpose of Jesus' life was not ice cream cones and loves and even homes and jobs and all of those things. Jesus came to die. And you know, the truth is, so did you. You were born to die. And you were born to die and either go to heaven, to glory, or to go to hell. And when I say you were born to do that, I don't mean, and if you come to tonight's sermon, you will clearly hear me say that God didn't determine that. It's just that that is one or the other your end. That's what awaits us at the end of life. Why would Paul say, I determined not to know anything? Because I don't want anything to interfere with that. Jesus Christ and Him crucified means Jesus came to die, He died. Jesus rose from the dead, He's in heaven, He's waiting on me. If I know that, and that's always in the front of my mind, I can join Him. If I don't know that, and I get sidetracked by all these other things, well, I can be led astray. Paul said, if we live to the Lord. If we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. That's what life is about. Lay up for yourselves, Jesus said, treasures in heaven. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where's your heart this morning? Are you calling for the Lord to abide with you? Do you want God to be with you every waking moment of every hour? Is that the intent of your life? Have you recognized that as the purpose of life? To be with Jesus, to have Him with you right now, and to remain with you, stay with you, and you with Him. Is that what drives you? Is that the most important thing in your life? If that's your number one concern right now this morning, and you've never obeyed the gospel, then you're ready to obey. If you believe in Jesus, that He's the Son of God, and you'll confess that, and you're willing this morning to repent, to belong to the Lord, and to let the Lord lead you and guide you through every step of life, and if you will be baptized to have your sins washed away, you are certainly ready to do that right now this morning. Are you here and you are a child of God? We're going to talk a lot tonight about being a child of God, but not being in that frame of mind we just described. Are you looking at your life and are you saying, I need the Lord? I may have been baptized, I may be a child of God, but I need the Lord. I want to ask for the Lord to be with me, and I want to be with Him. I'd like for you to pray for me because I'm struggling with that. If you need to come this morning, please come while James leads us.